Recent sensational media reports about violent incidents involving young people of African heritage have raised social and political tensions. Many argue that the media and politicians use such incidents to demonise people of African descent in Australia. Do these types of reporting have the facts correct? And what are the effects of fear-mongering on the African communities? We're joined now by the convener of Migration and Refugees Research Network at the University of South Australia, Melanie Bark. Good morning, Melody.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for speaking with us. So how long has this sensationalisation of gangs in the media occurred in Australia?
Probably if you trace back the media reporting over the years, the first real occurrence that's noted is in around 2007, after the murder of a young South Sudanese heritage man, Liep Goyn, in Melbourne. He was bashed to death by two Anglo-Australians, and yet the media somehow managed to use that as a way to portray African young people as being gangs and a visibly, significantly and threatening different minority.
Now, this most recent spate has been, quite often called gang-related. Is that reasonable?
Well, the Victorian Police Commissioner has, in fact, come forward and said it's not really a gang and it's certainly not a crisis, that there are young African people involved in criminal activity, particularly in the western suburbs of Melbourne, but it's by no means a crisis, and that it's probably not significantly greater, and they're not more significantly greatly represented in the crime statistics than other Australian groups. It's just concentrated in this one particular region.
Again, one other point on the Chief Commissioner of the Victorian Police. One other point he made clear in his statements that many of these so-called African gang members are young enough to have been born in Australia. What's the significance of that?
Yeah, that's right. I think especially when you look at Peter Dutton, the Home Affairs Minister's call for deportation of those of African heritage who might be involved in criminal activity. The fact that most of them have never been seen South Sudan, weren't born in South Sudan, some were born in refugee camps, but a majority of them have been in Australia from the age of 2, 4, 6, so have really grown up in Australia and really only know Australia as home. So to me, it really tells more a story of the way Australia has failed these young people as opposed to the way they're often portrayed in the media, which is as having histories as child soldiers or of witnessing violence and trauma. Most of them haven't seen any conflict in South Sudan. So to me, it really does show more a failing of Australia's systems in engaging with and including these young people.
Now, given the questionable nature of these stories, of which, as we've just outlined, how has this become such a big issue?
It's interesting as you trace back. So the 2007 response, for example, to Liep Goyn, the then Immigration Minister, Kevin Andrews, he responded at the time by culling numbers of African immigrants and refugees into Australia and also positioning them as not integrating properly into Australia. That was an election year, and like the asylum seeker kind of discourses in the political space, the African immigrant often becomes a sort of political pawn in the lead up to both state and federal elections. So I think this is another case where Kevin Andrews is positioning this as another, I guess, political draw card to try and recruit particular voters.
Now, if you see this as you just stated, as a political pawn, what effect does using this as a wedge have on the African communities?
Oh, it has a staggering effect on the African communities. I've heard stories of people in Queensland, in Dutton's home state, of being followed down the streets and racially taunted as they walk down the mall in the middle of the day. There's been a video that's been circulated widely of a young African family who was threatened again in Queensland in their homes. Likewise, I've heard stories in South Australia and Victoria of young people and older people of South Sudanese heritage who have, for the first time in Australia, felt threatened and intimidated by people with racially based aggression.
And again, given the emphasis from those that are touting these gang related stories of integration, what can be the long term effects of exclusions like that the African communities have been seeing?
I mean, the biggest response I've heard from people of South Sudanese heritage is it's really clear to them that they're not wanted here and that they probably may never fit here. So it pushes them to look at going back to South Sudan, which for some that have never been to South Sudan is a really troubling thing. But more so, I think it just pushes them into secluded groups away from being able to integrate into the broader Australian community as feeling like they don't belong and that they can't be a part of it.
I'm speaking with Convener of Migration and Refugee Research Network at the University of South Australia, Melanie Bark, about recent news coverage of African youth gangs. Now, Peter Dutton, who you mentioned before, has said that people are scared to go out to restaurants at night time. How have people rebutted this?
There's been a big rebuttal in Melbourne, both by the African community and also by the broader Melbournean community. There was a hashtag that people used immediately following that. It was Melbourne Bites Back, and people would tweet and Facebook post photos of themselves at restaurants dining out in Melbourne. The Premier of Victoria has invited Peter Dutton out to dinner in Melbourne's west just to show him that people are still going out to dinner. So there's been a big swing back from, or an attack back from the people of Melbourne. But it also started a Twitter post circulating within the African community as well, where families and young people of African descent were posting with the hashtag African gangs. And they were posting photos of themselves and families at their university graduations or at work as they're working as pharmacists or engineers or in hospitals and all sorts of everyday things that they were doing, going to the beaches with the families, to show that the way that they're being positioned as African gangs, just because they hang out in their families or as groups of young people or groups of older people, it doesn't make them an African gang. They're just African people of African appearance going about their everyday business.
Now, obviously, that's an extremely positive spin on such an outright statement that's clearly wrong. But what kind of a message does a statement like this from someone so high up in the government send to people of African descent in Australia?
I think it really legitimises the racism and the racist undertones that do underpin so many things, both everyday racism and institutional racism. So we see that people of South Sudanese heritage really struggle to gain professional employment, despite quite significant numbers having tertiary education, tertiary qualifications. Very few manage to find professional employment in the areas of their qualifications. And so these kinds of media, political comments or comments from people in positions of status enable acts of everyday racism and further encourage, I guess, that sort of institutional racism that's so embedded within Australia's systems.
Now, as we've touched upon, there has been many attempts to refute these claims and really highlight the wrongness of these African gang stories. But what needs to change to make this better?
I think there has to be more accountability for the politicians that make these stereotypical claims. And we've seen again in the past week Donald Trump make similar claims. So it's a global problem where politicians use these kind of fear-mongering campaigns to position particular groups to gain votes from the broader population. And in times where we're seeking forms of white nationalism and clinging to particular forms of national identity, we're seeing it more and more from our politicians and those in power. But also the media needs to, I think, take more caution with the ways in which they're reporting these things. So you see, there was a media outlet in Victoria that actually framed some African youth in the days following Dutton's claims so that they could get pictures and video footage of them getting angry, but they actually incited the anger and they've had to come out and make an apology. So police called for media in Victoria to have some restraint and some care in the ways in which they're reporting around these things.
Well, Melanie, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
No worries. Thanks very much for having me, Tom.
We very much appreciate it. The convener of Migration and Refugees Research Network at the University of South Australia, Melanie Bark there speaking with us about the so-called African youth gangs situation and the way that's been used as fear-mongering.